Jobs in Wisconsin. Accusations of plagiarism. Budget shortfalls. Voter ID. And a ballot redesign. We'll discuss all of these issues in our State Capitol Report this hour and welcome your questions and views for two state lawmakers. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Monday, September 22nd. In this first half of our State Capitol Report, we will hear from Republican State Senator Paul Farrow. And coming up after 7:30, we will hear from Democratic State Senator Jennifer Schilling. And we welcome your thoughts for both of them at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Paul Farrow is a Republican state senator from Pewaukee. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for being with us. First, let's get your reaction to the latest jobs report from the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. We are 33rd in the nation in terms of job creation. What's your read on where we are?
Well, I look at the job growth in, you know, coming in the last 4 years. I came into office in 2010 election. And when you start looking historically where Wisconsin's always been in job growth, we're pretty similar to where we've been almost the last 10 to 12 years. And I think that's one of the issues that we have with the type of makeup we have in Wisconsin being primarily manufacturing. I would love to see a larger growth. I would love to see us growing at a faster rate. One of the things that I also look at, though, especially when you're looking at job growth, coming out of the recession that we had in 08 and 09, is the unemployment rate. And our unemployment rate right now is at 5.6%, which is lower than it was pre-recession. And so that's something else I think we need to keep in mind is we are creating the jobs. We're getting people back. The other issue that we have is we still have a lot of jobs that are out there that aren't being filled. When you look at the state record programs, we've got over 50,000 jobs that are out there waiting to be filled. We don't have the skilled labor yet to fill those jobs. And I think that's one of the things we've been working on the last 4 years with some of the programs to give people the opportunity to fast track onto those job skills.
Yeah. Well, looks like this latest report shows Wisconsin 8th in the Midwest of the 10 Midwestern states, ahead of Illinois and Minnesota, but still 8th. What's your read on that?
Well, I think it's the same thing. When you look at different states, Michigan and Indiana, areas that are showing some growth, there's different climates that have occurred recently with legislation. Both of those now have right-to-work legislation. They freed up some opportunities. When you look at states, especially like Michigan, that has gone into such a decline, growth that they have is something that should be seen. They have that opportunity because they were so far down. We have been pretty level on what we have in the job numbers. And I think that's one of the things I keep looking back to. When you look at the recession area, 2008, 2009, we had a negative job growth as low as 5%. That's systematic to the entire economy, to the national economy. And part of what we have to keep in mind is the national economy still isn't jump-starting. We're still having a very slow growth in the national economy, and that's systemic to what's going on in Wisconsin as well.
But isn't the national job growth rate better than Wisconsin?
Well, it is better than Wisconsin, but then if you look at it historically, like I said before, the last 10 years, we've never been better than the national average. We've always been below the national average across the entire 10-year cycle. And so our growth in Wisconsin, because we're primarily a manufacturing state, we have to look at ways that we can differentiate where our jobs are. And I think that's part of what you see with the venture capital programs, with the startup programs that we've started to develop here in the last 4 years, are giving us an opportunity, but it's going to take a long time, especially when our economy has been based on manufacturing for so long. Trying to change an entire cycle of how we produce things and what other markets we go into is going to take a while.
Yeah. So the 100,000 jobs created since Governor Walker entered office. He promised 250,000.
Mm-hmm.
But that was a mistake?
I don't know if it was a mistake. I think a goal of getting to 250,000 jobs is a great idea to put out there. Excuse me, that we want to challenge to get back into the shape of things. You know, when you look at 2008, 2009, going into 2010, we lost over 130,000 jobs. So we're starting, theoretically, in the hole of 130. We're getting back to the point where we're almost even, and we want to grow again. That's what we've got to keep looking at and continue to do.
Speaking of jobs, what is your reaction to the reports that Mary Burke's jobs plan had plagiarized proposals of other Democratic candidates elsewhere in the country?
Oh, it's unfortunate. You know, I guess when I look at and when we run and candidates run in different situations, we come out with ideas and concepts. I like to think that we're trying to do a better opportunity for Wisconsin. I think the governor came out with a jobs plan, and Mary Burke even classified his job plan of a couple of last cycle as something that eighth grader could have done better. As a father with a 16-year-old student, I know that he understands if he takes information from someone else, he has to properly cite it. If she would have done that same thing, this wouldn't be an issue. But she's took information from someone that she got help with. That individual took the exact same verbiage, brought it into her report. The concern that I have with that is two of the sources that he used were from failed campaigns. So why would she think that the jobs plan they came up with would be effective for Wisconsin? You know, you look at the areas that she was talking about, primarily with agriculture, we're now showing a major increase in agriculture to the bottom line in Wisconsin. You know, and I think the report came out showing that basically, you know, we're looking at $88 billion impact now from the agricultural business with 400,000 jobs that are involved in that. That's a significant area that shows incredible growth from 2007 when the last report was done. It's almost a $29 billion increase. We need an individual that's going to stand by their words that they created and make sure that they're doing the right thing for Wisconsin, not just bring cut-and-paste ideas from other states that have failed. And I have a big concern with that.
Yeah. And how do you respond to Democrats who would say Republican lawmakers do the same thing when it comes to model legislation proposed by ALEC?
Well, if I take model legislation, and, you know, I find it interesting that we talk about one organization when I'm a member of three different organizations, the National Conference of State Legislators, the Council of State Governments, and the American Legislative Exchange Council. When I go to those conferences and I talk with legislators and I find out what has worked well for their state in different types of legislation, I can bring back that model legislation, but I don't typically use it word for word. I have to take it to what's our legislative council, the lawyers for the legislature, and they look at it compared to our state statutes and say, okay, yeah, we already have things in statutes to cover this, but there are some nuances here that we could initiate if you'd like to, and then we draft legislation for it. Typically, you don't see a bill come from another state verbatim and get plugged in. And I think that's a big difference in what you're looking at, because typically when we do something, we credit where it's come from. I had the opportunity to go to one of the conferences and show people the model legislation we did in 2011 with our telecommunications upgrades and the updates we did with the statutes. That is now being used as model legislation in other states because we had so much buy-in from all the interested parties, the telecommunication companies, the local municipalities, and had bipartisan support on it. And that bill itself, I think, passed, I think, if I can remember correctly, through the assembly at like a 77 votes out of 99. So we had great bipartisan support. It shows when we get together and work what we can accomplish.
We need to take a short pause. We will continue talking with Paul Farrow, a Republican state senator from Pewaukee, about various issues making news in Wisconsin's political scene. This is our State Capitol Report. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is our State Capitol Report. I'm Joy Cardine. Coming up after 7:30, we will welcome in another state lawmaker. Democratic State Senator Jennifer Schilling from La Crosse will join us after the news after 7:30. Right now, Paul Farrow is with us. He is a Republican state senator from Pewaukee. We welcome your questions, your views on the issues we're talking about for him at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. And Senator Farrow, according to our next guest, Senator Jennifer Schilling, Wisconsin's projected shortfall for the next budget is nearing $3 billion and could eventually hit $4 billion. Are we looking at a hole that deep?
I don't believe so. And I guess the one thing that I would question is, as Senator Schilling knows, we have to do a budget every 2 years. The information that she asked the Legislative Fiscal Bureau was, if everything stays the same as it is today, and there are no adjustments in spending, there are no adjustments in revenue, what would our projected deficit be in 2017? And so that's, you know, if you take the data, you put the data in, you get what you're asking for. You know, we looked at a memo that Senator Darling and Representative Nygren, the co-chairs of our Joint Finance Committee, asked for last week and said, okay, if we look at our responsibility of taking a budget every 2 years, we're going to start coming up with one next January. We assume the typical growth we've had over the last 5 to 6 years of 2.9%. Where would we stand in 15-17 if we went through a typical budget process, looked at our appropriations, our costs, reduced areas that we can like we've done before, where would we stand? And those numbers came out at a $535 million budget surplus. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those where we, I think, are in real good fiscal condition right now. We have a balanced budget. We have to have a constitutionally balanced budget every 2 years. We had a surplus coming out of this last fiscal year, coming into this fiscal year. So we're in pretty good shape. But we have to keep doing more. We have to be prepared in the next cycle coming in January of 15 to start looking at the next budget and make sure that we're being good stewards of the money, we're keeping our costs down, and we're keeping the revenues under control, hence keeping our taxes down on the people so that they have the money that they can use to spend to keep our economy strong.
Well, Senator Schilling says she is concerned about another round of devastating cuts in order to balance the budget. Other Republicans, including Senator Ellis, have said that a budget repair bill may be in order. How do you see it?
I am not on the Finance Committee, but I understand in looking at things that there are certain triggers that have to come into play, a certain percentage of debt that's there or reduction over the overall spending before a budget repair bill is triggered. I don't know where, I don't believe we're at that point right now, or we would have that called. I don't know where we stand, again, knowing the fiscal dollars, we've seen what's coming out. We're above the revenue projections right now from the Department of Revenue. I don't think we're going to need a repair bill. I guess the concern that I have in Senator Schilling, if you look back when we came into office, I came into office in 2010, the 9-10 budget that the Democrats were in control and produced increased our taxes and came out with a major structural deficit. In that same budget, you look at how they shifted money from the education to offset some of the costs in transportation and then backfill areas with one-time stimulus money from the federal government. And when you look at a backfill of over $750 million, going into the next biennium, where are we supposed to get that money that we're not going to have anymore? And so, yeah, we had to make some cuts because the previous budget made assumptions that we were going to have an exorbitant amount of money that wasn't there. And I think that was very irrational. It was very poor budgeting by the Democrats when they were in the position. And we have to keep track of how we're being stewards of our money. the federal government, as we see right now, is so messed up that they're not always going to be there to bail us out with their money, which is, as I say, technically my constituents' money going to the next level.
Let me jump in because we have a couple of callers, actually sure. Full lines, who want to talk to you and running short on time. Jeff in northern Wisconsin. Hi, Jeff. What do you want to say?
Good morning, Joe. Thanks for taking my call. I was just thinking about the accountability factor and how Governor Walker always talks about being accountable. Well, I remember several interviews that he granted prior to the elections back in 2010 where he was talking about 250,000 jobs being the floor. Not the ceiling, but the floor, a minimum. And to me, accountability should, I hope that people in the state hold him accountable for that promise that he broke or never attained to when it comes to voting this fall. He never did the things he said he'd do, but he did things that he never did say he'd do, like bust unions. That he did, but he never said he would.
Thanks, Jeff. A quick response to that, Senator Farrell.
Sure. And Jeff, I guess the way I would look at it is if the governor had four solid years in which to show his plans, what could come to fruition, we may be at 250,000. But like we know, he didn't have that full time. He was running again for election and a recall in 2012. There have been issues, both federal and state, that have hampered businesses when you talk to them about expanding their control, expanding their businesses. I just had one company I was with the other day who said, look, we're at 48 employees. I'd be ready to hire another 20, but I'm not going to do it because of the requirements under the Affordable Care Act of what kick in at 50 employees. And so we have to look at how we keep our costs down so that we can operate properly. When you have those external issues compiling what's gone on internally in Wisconsin over the last 4 years, we haven't had an atmosphere for true economic growth like we should have.
Let me move on to an issue we saw a news release from you on. You wrote a letter to Kevin Kennedy, the head of the Government Accountability Board, about your concerns over the new ballot that is going to be used this November. The ballot does not separate the title of the office from all of the candidates, and some Republicans have expressed concern over this. The title and the Democrat appear in the same box. How much confusion do you think this is going to cause?
Well, it's an interesting situation that occurred. I mean, they created a new ballot. We've had the same ballot in place for over a decade, and the same style was there. Everything is similar. People are very comfortable with it. If we were going to go with a change of a ballot, why didn't we do it in the primary election? You know, and people come back and say, well, we're looking at the photo ID and you're going to suddenly implement this in this general election in November. What people fail to remember is in 2012, we've already had a run through with photo ID. We had a primary election that occurred there. There were no signs of any suppression. There were no signs of any problems whatsoever that came up during that session. And then it was put on hold while it went through the courts. There are three Democratic municipal court, county court people that have said, we're going to go back to our old ballot because we thought it is confusing. My problem, again, is we have gone through a procedure in an organization, the Government Accountability Board, who it looks like decided they can do this without the approval of the Governability Council, the three-judge panel. So it's an internal procedure that we have no oversight on how it occurred, why it occurred, and why are they doing it now? Yeah. It seems pretty fishy.
What do you want the GAB to do?
I would like them to put it on hold, come back and, like they're supposed to, go to their three panel of judges and say, here's why we're doing this, or go through the legislative process and say, here's why we're recommending these changes and implement them for the next cycle. I think this is very sketchy in how they've done it. And it's something that needs to be reviewed.
Yeah. Before we run out of time, you touched on voter ID. How smoothly do you think everything's going to go with voter ID in place in the November elections? There's a story in the Wisconsin State Journal that says that the state has no budget for implementing voter ID and that the burden is falling on municipal clerks.
I think that when I talk to the municipal clerks in my area, they don't seem to have too many concerns. They're one where they said, hey, we had it implemented. We already have the rules. People went through the training back in 12, and now we're just reimplementing what we already had been doing. So we should be in good shape. There were some concerns that they had with the balloting for the absentee ballots. And it sounds like the Government Accountability Board came out and gave them some great ideas and reassurance of how to get things done. In the area around here, I know Milwaukee says they had about 8,000 requests for absentee ballots, but most of those hadn't been sent out yet. So we still had an opportunity for verification, what they needed to send back when they send the ballot back. I think we're in a good shape. It's an opportunity, I think, that people will realize that we're trying to bring some integrity back into our voting system, and we should be ready to go.
Well, we'll have to leave it there. We are out of time. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you. Have a great week.
Paul Farrell, Republican State Senator from Pewaukee. Coming up after the news, it's Jennifer Schilling, Democratic State Senator from La Crosse and the ranking Democrat on the Joint Finance Committee. And we will welcome your questions for her at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Oh, by the way, during our Week in Review Friday from 8 until 9, one of our guests will be former Lieutenant Governor Margaret Farrell, who happens to be Paul Farrell's mother. That's Friday between 8 and 9. We are talking about Wisconsin issues that are in the news in this edition of Our State Capitol Report. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 7:37 on this Monday, September 22nd. We just heard from Republican State Senator Paul Farrell in our first half of Our State Capitol Report. We talked about the new jobs report, projected budget shortfalls, a ballot lawsuit, voter ID. And we'll talk about those issues as well with our next guest. And we'll welcome your questions, your views at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our next guest lawmaker is Jennifer Schilling, a Democratic State Senator from La Crosse and the ranking Democrat on the Joint Finance Committee. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
We are 33rd in job growth for the 12-month period that ended in March, according to the latest jobs report released late last week from the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. What's your read on that?
Well, Wisconsin still ranks dead last in the Midwest for that job creation since Walker took office. That 8 out of 10 is in the past year. But over the last 4 years since Governor Walker took office, we still remain last behind all of our Midwest neighbors. And I think it continues to demonstrate that we have an anemic economy here in Wisconsin, that we are not growing as we should. And I think it really is troubling that a lot of the failed policies of this last administration, we continue to be not seeing that growth that was anticipated. And all of our neighboring states have gained private sector jobs at a faster pace since that first quarter of 2011. And the national economy continues to grow at a pace almost double that of Wisconsin's economy. So I think many people, many working families continue to struggle to make ends meet. And as we look ahead to the election and what new ideas that we could bring forward to help kind of jumpstart our economy, I think we need to be doing some things very differently than what we have done in the last 4 years under this administration.
Like what? What's holding us back?
Well, I mean, as now these job numbers are lagging, that translates into a budget that is going to be in deficit. And so I think I know in the last half hour you talked a lot, you covered a lot of ground with my colleague, Senator Farrell, but the jobs and the strength of our economy is really tied very closely to what that next budget will look like and how strong of a budget we can have and if we will be having a surplus or a deficit. And all points to the area of continue to have to look at a deficit as we move ahead to the next budget. So there are things that we could be doing I think would help build a better budget as we go into 2015 and 2017. I mean, the first thing had a lot of attention is certainly accepting that Medicaid money, that would help us kind of plug some of these holes that we are seeing. Other things such as, you know, increasing minimum wage, expanding the earned income tax credit. But as we look at these job numbers, I mean, these still continue. The jobs is Governor Walker's Achilles heel, and it really has been now a broken promise of 250,000 jobs, and to hold him accountable over his work over the last 4 years and what has not been working for working families in Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk a little bit more about that projected budget shortfall. How bad do you view this situation? Give us what you asked for and what you learned.
Right. The nonpartisan fiscal bureau, I mean, those numbers and the way that they provide analysis in a nonpartisan fashion, I mean, that really is the gold standard in Wisconsin. That's a good housekeeping seal of approval of the numbers that come out of that office. With that projected deficit of $1.8 billion, that's the third largest deficit that the Fiscal Bureau has tracked since they started doing this. And so they have confirmed that Wisconsin will end the current fiscal year with a $396 million deficit unless there's action taken to address this crisis in the current budget. But looking ahead to 2015-2017, Wisconsin could face a budget shortfall, first of $1.8 billion, but now between $3 to $4 billion because agency requests were due to the governor last Monday as he builds his budget going into the next fiscal year. So because there are going to be decreased revenue, and really it's that structural deficit is that state's long-term spending commitment. And because the state's spending and the taxing responsibilities will result in future deficits because they're not going to be even. So when you have a slow economy plus the tax cuts that the governor has put forward, that translates into the structural deficit that we are looking at. So as we talk about those future cuts, and finally 2 weeks later, my Republican colleagues, I'm pleased they were able to come around and acknowledge that there will be a deficit, because as the memo that came out from the co-chairs, they acknowledge that there will have to be $116 million in cuts as they put forward a request to that agency with four kind of caveats that I have never seen. Someone put forward a request to the budget office and asked, saying, if this, and this is in place, what would that be? And that's basically what they did. But they identified $116 million in cuts that will be needed. And I think that will be a very interesting discussion that we need to have sooner than later, because what those potential cuts will mean to seniors and students and working families, to the university system, the technical school system. What do those cuts mean as we go into the next budget?
Help me understand. I thought Senator Farrow said that you asked for these numbers presuming zero growth, and of course there's going to be growth, he says. But when you run the numbers, I mean, he's saying that the state has a budget surplus right now. Is he wrong?
Requested was with no revenue growth and no increase in spending. And the governor has set forth in his budget directive no increase in spending to agencies. So I think that is one that recognizes the fiscal situation that we're in, that there was agreement there. But as you look at that, the growth that was expected, we already have a $281 million shortfall in 2013-2014. And then rather than growing by 1% with our economy, we fell by 1%. So we left very little margin for error with a closing balance of $165 million. So we don't have a lot in our rainy day fund. If the state was expected to have even 3.5% revenue growth in 2014-2015, we are looking at base level, and this is really in the weeds, and I understand it's confusing, but it's already 2% lower than that. We are expecting, they are needing 5.6% growth, which I think we have not seen. So I think some of the numbers that they are dealing with are not realistic over the past budget trends that we have seen over the last several years.
Let's take a call from Jerry in Junction City. Hi, Jerry.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's your question?
Well, I listened listen to your show a lot, and I love the comments and the atmosphere. But I have a question for the senator. With the election year coming up, all I continuously hear is what the other people aren't doing. They're both sides. So what are you doing? What is your party doing to help fix this in this bipartisanship everybody wants to get to? You know, I believe a long time ago we lost the government by the people, for the people, of the people, and it's now just party on party.
Yeah. So, thanks. Jerry wants to know what are the Democrats doing to try to fix this situation, Senator Schilling.
Well, the first thing I mentioned earlier was accepting the federal money for expansion of Medicaid in this state. That has already cost taxpayers over $200 million. Going into the next budget, it could cost state taxpayers anywhere between $250 and $300 million. So. Right there is an avenue of our federal taxes that we have paid as citizens into the federal pot that we could bring back into our state. Many other states, even with Republican governors, are looking at that as a way to help build their budget. So that's one area. We've talked about increasing minimum wage to $10.10. That would help more than 500,000 people in the state put more money in their pocket, over 230,000 families with children. So if they're earning more, then they're able to pay more in taxes. Looking at expanding the earned income tax credit to help keep taxes low for 250,000 people here in Wisconsin. And looking at the higher ed lower debt bill to address student loan debt crisis to help new graduates, as they go out into the workforce, if they can find a job, make sure that they can lower their debt as they are just kind of starting out with careers, houses, families, big purchases such as that. So I think there are certainly some areas that we as Democrats have been talking about, and there are some of these are bipartisan initiatives, and there have been support as you look across the country. 13 states have increased the minimum wage, and so I think these are things that states outside of Wisconsin are looking at to help build better budgets, stronger economies, and help grow their local economies in their states.
Yeah. Your reaction to the charges of plagiarism in the Mary Burke campaign, a campaign consultant that she fired, had apparently lifted sections of proposals by other Democratic candidates and put that in Mary Burke's jobs plan. What is your reaction to that?
Demonstrates that we are in the height of political silly season right now and trying to find anything that will stick and deflect from the economy and jobs and what really is at stake here in this election. I think that the core strategies by Mary Burke outlines the vision, her vision for Wisconsin economy that she really has laid out as her own. The small passage in question were on background or in facts, and I think that many of Mary's ideas are informed by her time at the Harvard Business School, through starting her own small business, serving as a Trek executive, and her time at the Department of Commerce. So I think that the timing of this does not really come as a surprise to anyone. And I hope we could get back on track and look at the issues that are facing Wisconsin during this election time and the vision for the next 4 years. That I really, the New Republic had said that this is much ado about nothing. And I hope that we can kind of get back to talking about, public schools and jobs and what we can do to strengthen Wisconsin and our families here.
Well, we will get back to talking about the projected budget shortfall. What do you think of this? Is this something that you're worried about, or do you think it's not a huge deal? We'll also talk about the voter ID law that a federal appeals court ruled could be put in place for the November election. And we'll talk about what effect that might have on the election. And we'll welcome any questions you might have. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the State Capitol Report. I'm Joy Cardine, talking in this half of our State Capitol Report with Democratic State Senator from La Crosse, Jennifer Schilling. Senator Schilling is also the ranking Democrat on the Joint Finance Committee. We welcome your questions for her at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. Well, let me ask you about a couple of the other issues in the news that we heard from Senator Farrell about as well. What do you make of this newly designed ballot that will be used on Election Day and the Republicans' legal efforts to stop that?
Well, as far as kind of that ballot change, first of all, I never overestimate the interest of voters, and I never underestimate their intelligence. So I think voters, when they go into the ballot, they will go into their voting precinct and receive that ballot, that they will be intelligent enough to be able to look at that ballot and make a decision that this is really, again, something that is political silly season. And, I mean, it's not enough that in this last session, under the current majority, we have cut early voting hours in this state. It's not enough that through redistricting changes that they have selected their voters and redrawn maps to benefit their party, that now with less than 50 days until Election Day, voters are told that we are changing the rules in the middle of the game and in the middle of this election process, and a photo ID will be needed. That, again, this is just, you know, I think grasping at straws, and I think voters in Wisconsin are smarter than that to see through this, that, again, it is a distraction of what has happened under this administration. And, I look at the Government Accountability Board, this should not be something that is playing out as big as it is.
Yeah. Well, that being said, Senator Farrell wants the GAB to go back to the original ballot design. Do you think that's important that happen?
Well, I hear from county clerks that I've been in communication with that they are scrambling more over the changes in the photo ID law than they are under this ballot change. So.
Yeah.
Again, I think that their outrage is misplaced, and again, it's something that another excuse for them to try to change the discussion about Wisconsin and leadership in this state and moving our state forward.
Do you see any problems on Election Day with the implementation of voter ID?
Well, I think that citizens right now who do not have a photo ID should start making arrangements to acquire the proper ID. I know that Senator Farrell lives outside of Milwaukee, a Milwaukee suburb, a pretty metropolitan area. I represent rural Wisconsin, and some of the Department of Motor Vehicles are only open 2 to 3 days between now and November 4th, that they are only open limited times. They're not in the evening. Sometimes it's only half days, and that is for many parts of Wisconsin. So, we have seen this tactic before, that when the majority party feels vulnerable, they look to seek to change the rules. And there really is, we know that in-person voter fraud is virtually non-existent in Wisconsin, and that the law is merely an attempt to discourage voters in the city from and in the state from casting ballots in November. But having said that, I am encouraging our universities, I am encouraging other areas, citizens who do not have a photo ID, to follow the required information if they can get to it, because what I find outrageous really is, again, changing the rules in the middle of this election process when we've already had November or August primaries under one set of rules and a different set for the November, that there will be people who voted in August that will not be able to cast a vote in November, and they have that legal right to do so.
John in Bangor is with us. Hi, John.
Hi. The question I have is, it's my understanding that if I don't have a voter ID, or a proper ID card on November 4th, that I can still cast a provisional vote and then come back by the Friday after the election day with an ID. My question is, how does that clerk match my ID card with the ballot that I cast while preserving the anonymity of my vote?
Do you know that, Senator Schilling?
I do not know that, but I think the larger question is that this very well, I mean, all polls indicate this is going to be a very close election, that we may not have a clear and decisive winner on the evening of Tuesday, November 4th. This could go into several days after the election day on Tuesday when absentee ballots need to be returned and counted, and then if we need to move into the provisional ballots as well. So again, I think that sort of underscores kind of the election chaos that may come about after this new ruling. And it is one that I know that the clerks and now poll workers who need to be trained in this, and these poll workers are volunteers or our friends and neighbors in our communities, that they need to be trained under this as well. So I think that this really is going to, the intention is to suppress the vote, make it confusing to vote, make it harder to vote, when indeed we need to be moving in the other direction and making, encouraging people to turn out and vote and not putting up these hurdles and making it literally an obstacle course for people to be able to receive a photo ID and then present it on election day.
We just have a minute to go. After the dust settles from the elections, what's the state's top priority?
Well, certainly it will be as we go into the next budget. The governor, he or she, whoever wins in November, that will be really the first big item that will require their time as we go in January. We reconvene and looking at these, struggling numbers in the state as we put together the budget, if it's, what the structural deficit is. But as we go into this next budget, we already have many agencies that have identified deficits that they are looking at, if it's in medical assistance, if it's in the transportation budget, it's if it's veterans fund. So that certainly will be job one. We'll be getting together these numbers, looking to see if there needs to be additional cuts moving forward, how that happens, or how we can look at ways of growing our economy, where it is an economy that benefits all of us in Wisconsin, because we all do better in Wisconsin when we all do better.
In less than 30 seconds, are we going to have a budget repair bill?
Well, that depends on who you talk to. It was interesting when the net numbers came out about that structural deficit. And what was disappointing is I think we could have been more pragmatic about last year's budget. We could have been more prudent. We could have put more aside, not so quick to push out all of the tax cuts when we really did not have that money available to spend. Mm-hmm. And listening to two of my colleagues who have been members of the state Senate for many years, Senator Ellis and Senator Coles, they too had expressed some regret. And we're thinking that this is something that the legislature will have to take up early January with a budget repair bill.
We need to leave it there. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.